with everything you read, if you're own, you groan and you think, oh my God, where were my editors? You know, that is so tried, or this or that. And other parts I thought, God, that's really good. And there are actually some passages I thought were really beautiful, and that might even be helpful.
Hello, and welcome to The Right Question. This is another TWQ mini episode. The Right Question is a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the American West and beyond. Our funding comes from Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. I'm Lauren Korn, speaking with Anne Lamott, or Annie, about her classic craft book, Bird by Bird, Some Instructions on Writing and Life. Annie will be speaking about writing and craft at the Wachholz College Center in Kalispell on January 31st. Anne Lamott is the author of 7 novels and several books of nonfiction. She's been honored with a Guggenheim Fellowship and has taught at UC Davis, as well as writing conferences across the country. Annie, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Like many young or emerging writers, I actually came to your work when I was introduced to a book that I'm sure you know. It's become a classic and a go-to resource for writers and writing instructors, and that's Bird by Bird, Some Instructions on Writing and Life. And it's up there, at least for me, with Stephen King's On Writing or Richard Hugo's The Triggering Town. And now it's been over 20 years since Bird by Bird was released. And I'm curious how your own relationship to that book has changed, how you think about the advice that you wrote then and what you might add to it 30 years later.
That's a great opening question. And I think it's actually 25 years, because in my failing memory, I think that they brought out a 25th anniversary edition. And and also what's interesting, because I never read my own stuff, but I always, whenever I'm teaching, I teach the basic principles, which is Bird by Bird and Short Assignments and terrible first drafts and asking friends for help and breaking through perfectionism and perfectionism as the voice of the oppressor and whatnot. But my son Sam and I just recorded it in my own voice. It had never been, somebody else recorded it all those years ago for the audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
And my son has a studio called Square One Studio, and he and his business partner and I recorded the book to release, I guess, sometime early this year. So it's the first time I've read it in 25 years.
Wow.
And like with everything you read of your own, you groan and you think, oh my God, where were my editors? You know, that is so tried, or this or that. And other parts I thought, God, that's really good. And there are actually some sections that, you know, passages, not whole sections, passages I thought were really beautiful and that might even be helpful.
You said that you were surprised and kind of, you groaned through some of the advice that you gave in Bird by Bird. Now, as a writer, again, like 25, 30 years on, what do you think you would add to the book? Do you have any advice that you'd be like, that absolutely should go into the 40th or the 30th anniversary edition?
Well, when I come to Montana, I really, really, really welcome people's questions on really specific aspects and problems in their own writing or getting started or finishing or, you know, what material you can use. And to that, I say you can use anything that happened to you. It's all yours. And if people wanted you to write more warmly about them, they should have behaved better. But one thing that is not in the book, because it's so old now, is the fact that we're all on computers now. And of course, it makes life infinitely easier in every possible way, but we also lost a great deal. When I was coming up, we typed, and we didn't have Xerox machines. We had carbon paper. And then we had, I remember what correcto tape was, such a huge breakthrough. And I have manuscripts that I'm just sorting through right now that are have correcto tape, where your young audience won't even know what that is, but it's really, really thin white paper, a scotch tape that you put over a mistake and type over it. And that's what all the writers before us did. and it connected you with all the writers ever since the invention of the typewriter. And that the sounds of writing are sacred to me because that's what I came up on. You know, the tap, tap, tap of the typewriter were some of my first memories. My dad was a writer, and he wrote at 5:30 every single morning before he stopped to make the three of us breakfast at 7. And that tap, tap, tap of the old Olympia. And then also the sound of scratching, the pencil scratching across paper. And with my writing workshops, I just insist that people correct on paper mm-hmm. and that they use sharp pencils, you know, because that sound is sacred. So, but in terms of your question, what do I know now? You know what, Lauren, I know the same thing. It goes really badly most days and you do it anyway. You keep your butt in the chair. You do it as a debt of honor. You do it because something inside of you has always wanted to write or wrote extensively and then gave up. And then because people said your parents wanted to know if you've gotten an agent now or the, you know, the inside, the critical voice told you you were never going to publish it or it was beating a dead horse or whatever. And I'll try to come up with a better answer by the time I'm in Montana.
And I'll be at the Walcott Center, so I'll be able to come up to you and ask you again, and maybe you'll have a different answer. Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. Maybe not. Well, before I officially began this conversation with you, Annie, you were saying that as you were healing, you thought it was long COVID, you've been sick, but as you've been healing, you've been doing some of the best writing. Let's talk about that. What are you writing now? You're a fiction writer. You're also a nonfiction writer. What are you writing now, and how are you feeling about that writing?
Well, as I said, I don't feel well some half of every day, and which is funny because I'm really healthy. But I started writing a novel last year during COVID. Maybe it was 2 years ago. I wanted to write a novel, and it turned out it wasn't any good. It was so strange because I love, 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 love good novels. And I just didn't have the gift, or I don't know if I will again. But so then I started writing pieces that I love, like all of the last 8 or 9 books have been, last at least 6 books that have been essays about life and spirituality and creativity and family and, you know, how we come through. And that as you get older, I'll be 69 in April, although I think I'm 54, but if I look at my driver's license, I can see that that's not true. The people I know that are younger, which is to say roughly 50 and under, are terrified of death, which I'm not, and which you tend not to be so much as you get older, because you've been through with so many people who've passed, and it has never really been awful. It's always been pretty gentle and beautiful and blessed. And you've learned that you're not going to get over much here. That the way you were is probably the way you are, and that we heal emotionally and spiritually. And a lot of us in recovery can't even believe we've become people that are so much healthier and more present, I think, is the main thing, and less striving and grasping and clinging. And so I write a lot about that. I write a lot of stuff that I hope my child, Aunt Sam, who's 33, and my grandchild who lives here, who's 13, I hope that will be helpful to them no matter what the future holds. And I want to write stuff about what has always worked and maybe always will.
I love that you said that, because one of my questions to you was whether your methods for maintaining hope, whether they've changed, you know, especially in this Anthropocene, in this time of climate crisis, but also political and social upheaval as well.
Certain things have always worked in your life and in my life, in my child's life. And those were achieving a great deal didn't work. It worked for several days, you know, mm-hmm. and then you wanted to do even better. Or you felt a deeper need to cling to what you had achieved, to bank it, to invest it. Trying to get time not to pass never really worked. Maybe for you, not for me.
Yeah.
And what has worked is community love. What Martin Luther King, it was just his birthday, mm-hmm. called the beloved community. That's always worked. The individual ambition and striving and identity has never really worked. For me, prayer and meditation and doing the work on presence and just kind of being here now, here and there every day, and being outside and breathing have always worked, and I believe always will. Stories have always worked, and telling the truth have always worked, and seeking the truth has always worked, and sitting at the feet of the masters has always worked and always will.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, both as writers, where you sit at the feet of the masters, is kind of the main work you can do to get better, is to read all the greatest writers of all time. And every great poet, modern and Iraqi and, you know, Greek and in your own neighborhood, have always worked to become better and better writers. And to study how Barbara Kingsolver's novels are structured, why they work, and why Alice Munro's short stories work, how she structures them, how the arc feels so organic and natural, and how the climax is the only thing that could have happened, even though you gasp when it does. And so then with spirituality or human growth and growing up, which has not been my strong suit, is to watch and to read the people who have written so extensively and so beautiful. Like right off the bat, when I was a teenager, Thomas Merton, although I was not a religious teenager, I was very, very interested in spirit and in philosophical truth. And when I read The Seven Story Mountain, it changed me. It was a small part of what I would dare to call my awakening. And so that's what I mean. That has always worked. That worked 3,000 years ago. And it worked in, late December when it was pouring rain and cold and everything felt, and the Congress was transitioning and the speakers, all that was going on, certain things worked. Hmm. Reading Jack Kornfield worked. Reading Sharon Salzberg worked, So that's what I'm talking about.
That's a wonderful piece of advice that we can end on, Annie. So thank you so much. This was Anne Lamott. Thank you so much for joining me in conversation today.
Thank you, Lauren. And I look forward to meeting you in Kalispell.
Yes, yes. I will be at the Wachholz Center on the 31st. Yes.
Come up and throw yourself into my arm.
I will 100% absolutely do that. Can't wait.
Okay, good. I'll see you then.
That was Anne Lamott, author of 2021's Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage, and of Bird by Bird, Some Instructions on Writing and Life. Look for more information about Annie at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You've been listening to The Right Question. This show was produced by me. I'm your host, Lauren Korn. Chris Moyles engineered this episode. Our artwork was designed for The Right Question by Molly Russell, and our music was written and recorded by John Floridis. Funding for The Right Question is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting this program since 2008, and thank you for listening. The Right Question is a production of Montana Public Radio.